Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf alongside Nick Reitz, Kevin Wildes, Greg Jennings is with us. Gentlemen, hope you had a very nice weekend. Coming up on a very rainy, it is rainy, rainy Monday morning here in New York City. In an unprecedented move, Tom Brady finally did something corny, and it's got Nick thrilled.
I'll tell you what that is.
Also, Jameis is willing to... We are starting the show like that, Wilds. Jameis is willing to be a backup. Cam is not, and Joe Burrow's making some headlines. We'll wait on the Tom Brady story for you, Wilds. We will start with Burrow. Here we go. Joe Burrow is coming off a perfect 15-0 season where he won a national championship and the Heisman. But next week, he could be drafted first overall to a Bengals team coming off a 2-14 season, a team that hasn't had a winning season in 4 years. And this weekend, the overwhelming favorite to go number one turned some heads by saying, quote, "I just want to go somewhere where I can win." Nick, of everything that you've heard from Joe Burrow over the course of the last couple of weeks, you think Burrow wants to play for the Cincinnati Bengals?
No. And I don't blame him at all. I want to take a step back here for a moment. Listen, the draft is a somewhat absurd construct we've all just accepted. For all three of our major sports, the highest of high achievers at the amateur level get somewhat randomly assigned to a city they have no choice in for the next 7 years of their life, and they're just all supposed to like it and love it. So that's not realistic. But the draft is the system that we have, and the fans seem to like it, so it's going to stay in place. But Joe Burrow has done everything aside from create a homemade sign that says, "Please, someone trade up for me." And we got to take him at his word or at his lack of words. This all started back in January when he told our friend Dan Patrick, "You want to go number one, but you also want to go to a great organization that is committed to winning." It's kind of like saying, "I kind of want Chinese, but I also want Italian." You got to pick one of the two. He knew Cincinnati had the number one pick then. He also then in February said, "Whoever wants to pay me to play football, I'll play for them." He also hired Jordan Palmer to train him the day after Carson Palmer said, "I would never want to go to the Bengals if I were Joe Burrow." Carson Palmer, of course, who was the number one overall pick who went to the Bengals, which takes us to this quote from Shaq's podcast, where once again, he has ample opportunity to say, "I'm from Ohio. They have the number one pick. It's perfect." And instead, he hedges it. "I want to get drafted to a good team, good organization that's maximizing my talents. I've won everywhere I've been. I've never had a losing season. I'm not a loser. I just want to go somewhere I can win." Wilds, I don't think Joe Burrow is threatening not to play. In fact, he's made it very clear he's not going to threaten not to play. But at no point has Joe Burrow said, I think I'm the best player. My hometown team's got the number one pick. Sounds perfect to me. Excited to be a Bengal. I'd be disappointed if I'm not." I don't think I'm reading between the lines. I think I'm reading the lines that Burrow hopes someone trades up so he doesn't have to be a Bengal.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point, Nick. I feel like he could come right out and say it. And I'm not 100% sure why he's not. Maybe he's just hedging his bet a little bit. The other quote that I loved is where he just said, like, "I'm not a loser." He was like on his DJ Khaled, like, "All I do is win." And we had our researcher, Dusty, look it up. He said the last time Joe Burrow lost a game was November 24th, 2018 at Texas A&M. The guy is on a killer winning streak here. And I wonder, the subplot that I took from this podcast is how he's going to deal with all the losing that's coming Cincinnati's way. So, and I have a story about parenting and kids in general. When you have kids, you know that there's some big days coming up for you. You know, you got birthdays and graduations and their wedding. I've got a new day, and it's a day that everyone remembers. I'm calling it Ivan Drago Day. Ivan Drago Day is the day where you look at your kid and they're on a huge winning streak. Like, my kid's been winning basketball. He's got a 200-game winning streak going. And you just look at them on today's Ivan Drago Day, you say, "I must break you. Today is the day you have to learn to lose." And you make one more shot, and the kid's like, "What? What just happened?" It's like, yes, this is the real world. That's the world that Joe Burrow is going into. If we could put up the Bengals schedule, the Fox bet over-under, I think it's 5.5. Nick, They could go 0-for here. There's not, like, obvious games. Let's assume they lose all their away games. You think the Browns are going to lose? Maybe Jacksonville thinks they're going to lose? No other team thinks they're going to lose. 0-16 is on the board for the Bengals and Joe Burrow. So I think losing is underrated. And I think Joe Burrow is in for a sort of a rough ride in Cincinnati, Jenna.
Greg, jump in here. What do you think Joe Burrow really wants?
He said it. He wants to win. He wants to go to an organization that has proven that they can win, that they will utilize his abilities and his talents to the best. And if I'm a player and I'm potentially going to be the number one overall draft pick, I could say all these things too. However, you have to understand it is out of your control. And he knows that. And I think the one thing that Joe Burrow is really trying to do and convey is to any team that potentially wants and needs a quarterback, trade up for that number one pick.
Wow.
The yes. Miami Dolphins. Yes. If they don't want, if they don't feel like Tua's their guy, like the Jaguars, like these, the Lions, teams like that who are right there, but they can trade up. That's all he's really trying to do, and I think he's doing a great job. However, I would caution him because it is Cleveland, because it is Ohio, and you look at what LeBron James did with Cleveland being the number one overall draft pick out of high school to the Cleveland Cavaliers, a franchise who had won in however many years, and look what he was able to do, but he embraced that role. If he was willing to embrace it, he would be endeared forever in the state of Ohio and in the city of Cincinnati. I don't think he really cares about that, but we will see.
Nick, if the Bengals feel the way Greg said Joe Burrow probably feels, like, hey, message to all the other teams, if you need a quarterback, feel free to trade up. Should the Bengals even care? Should they care about what Joe Burrow wants?
No. I mean, unfortunately for Joe, like Greg mentioned, he has no say in it. And no, they shouldn't care. And because of the way it works in the NFL, you draft a guy in the first round, you have him for 5 years, you can franchise him 2 more years after that. So it's 7 years until he would have freedom of movement. But I want to circle back to Greg's point about LeBron, because I want to make this clear. I'm not attacking Joe Burrow here. I know that I said I'd take Tua number one. I got to know Joe a little bit. I think he's a super sharp kid, and I think he's going to be a good player. I like him a lot. I don't think it's a negative he doesn't want to go to Cincinnati, but I think it's pretty obvious he doesn't want to go to Cincinnati. I'm going to read you one more quote. The quote is this: I'm staying in Ohio, and I'm real excited. I'm not going to guarantee a championship, but I will guarantee we'll get better every day. We're going to be a lot better than last year, end quote. That was LeBron James the day the Cavs won the draft lottery. Not when they drafted him, the day they won the draft lottery. He's like, boom, staying in Ohio, I already know it. I'm the number one pick. You know it, I know it. We have heard nothing close to that, Wilds, from Joe Burrow, and I don't think it's reaching to say it's because he does want to entice another team to trade up and come get him.
Then why doesn't he just say it, Nick? Why doesn't, like, it's the fence sitting. You want him to just either go one way or the other. Do you think this is actually getting the message, or behind the scenes, is that the message that you think is going out?
Well, I'll kick this to you, Greg. I think the reason he doesn't just say it is you say it and you get labeled. Then he's a diva. He's a character. Yeah. He walks into the league with all this baggage. So, Greg, I think he's saying it without saying it. And I don't know what you think, but giving himself some plausible deniability here, Greg.
100% agreed, Nick. This is the perfect instance where you don't say what you really want, because you have to potentially go in that locker room with a bunch of guys that you're going to have to create relationships with and then convince that I can lead you to win, to turn this organization around. You don't go into a situation where you've pretty much burned every bridge and you've knocked over everything in the cupboards. Like, that is not how he wants to approach it. I think it's smart. He and everyone knows how he really feels.
All right. Well, important to note, the NFL virtual draft now just 10 days away. This will all sort itself out on April 23rd. Here with Vikings Pro Bowl tight end Kyle Rudolph. And Kyle, we are going to jump right in this morning. I was going to ask you, because I'm always curious how athletes stay athletic during a quarantine, let's just say. And then I found out you have twin 3-year-old girls, a 1-year-old boy. So I don't even really need to ask, but take me through a typical day. What has changed for you? What are you up to now? What's a day look like for you?
We're very busy entertaining those guys, that's for sure. It doesn't necessarily help me stay athletic, but it keeps me on my toes, that's for sure. It's been fun. You know, for me, our off season is very dictated by what the calendar says is time to do. And, you know, for us, we're usually gearing up to go back to when we can start working out as at the team facility. And this is allowing me to be at home, to be around my kids. So we're spending a lot of time together, a lot of arts and crafts, a lot of puzzles. So it's been fun. It's forced us to stay home and actually spend time together as a family.
Kyle, you're more than a friend of the show. I think you've been on the show. You and Cam Jordan are tied for the most guest appearances on this show, which is actually apropos because there's a safe space. We asked Cam about his side of this the other day. Now I'm going to ask you about it. That was OPI, right? You can tell us now. It's the season's over. The game-winning touchdown catch in the playoff game against Cam Jordan and the Saints. It's a safe space here, Kyle. That was OPI, right?
It's a reviewable play, and they looked at it. The rule was in there because of what happened to them in that exact stadium the year before. So there was no way I would get away with it. The play was reviewed as a scoring play, so they looked at it and decided it was an OPI. So I just got to go with what they called.
There you go. Okay. Kyle, you're entering your 10th season with the Vikings. You talked about how important it was for you to stay there. You want to stay there throughout your career. I want to talk about Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs famously would always wear that turtleneck, and he would always have the same thing for breakfast every day because he said that routine helped him be a leader. How does your routine and the familiarity of the Vikings help you perform on the field?
Well, he's very right. And, you know, for me being here 10 years, it has allowed me to establish my routine. And like you mentioned before, it allows you, it's one less decision that you have to worry about. So for me, I'm very routine oriented, especially in season. I get to the facility at the same time every day. I go through the same thing, the same process leading up to meetings. And that usually includes eating the same breakfast. So we have unbelievable chefs at the facility. Yeah. So they always cook me up a scramble with the same thing in it each and every morning. And you just walk up and they already know what you want.
The usual, just like Steve Jobs. Hey, Kyle, you guys are going to travel to Tampa this season to take on the Bucs. They have a new quarterback. Where is it? I know I put it down here. Tom Brady. How disappointing for you to see Brady join the NFC?
Yeah, it would have been nice if he stayed in the AFC, and we see him once every 4 years. But, you know, now we'll be going down to Tampa to play Tom, and you just kind of look at their roster and all the talent that they have around him on offense and an up-and-coming defense as well. So, you know, Tom didn't go there by mistake. You know, obviously he took that into consideration, and now the best quarterback of all time is in our conference, and we're going to have to go play him on the road.
Kyle, in the NFC last year, you could make the argument the best trio, wide receiver, tight end, Thielen, Diggs, Rudolph, what you guys had in Minnesota. Obviously, one-third of that trio was traded away this offseason with Stephon Diggs going to the Bills. What was your immediate reaction, your gut reaction, when you heard Diggs had been traded?
Well, it's a bummer because, you know, I know what Stephon brought to the table each and every Sunday and the competitor that he is and the fire that he brought to our offense. But at the same time, I know that Rick Spielman and George Payton, everybody else that's behind those decisions, have our team's best interests in mind. And, you know, I have all the faith in the world that they're going to take those 3 draft picks that we're able to get for him this year and bring guys in that'll help our football team win games. Obviously, you're not going to be able to replace a Stephon Diggs caliber player immediately, but I think the way our roster is set up, you add 3 more guys, it'll allow us to hopefully take the next step.
Kyle, there's been rumors floating around that Gronk might come back, and as a Patriots fan, I'm very happy, but It would be great to see him back in the league, but I'd be a little bit sad if he wasn't with the Patriots. And I can't tell how much credence to give this. Jason Witten retired, came back. Ben Watson retired, came back. What is it about tight ends where they can retire and come back? And you're the same age as Gronk. Do you think that Gronk could still have more in the tank?
I mean, I definitely think he still has more in the tank, but at the same time, he seems to be doing really, really well in his post-football endeavors. And I think the wrestling world would be extremely disappointed to see him back on the field on Sundays.
All right, Kyle, we're going to switch gears now, play a little game. Ours is less physical than football. Ours is called drawing a blank. Nobody's going to hit you. First up, we are going to ask you to set your bias aside for just a moment. The best tight end currently in the NFL is blank.
The best tight end in the NFL currently is Travis Kelce.
How come?
I think if you just look at what Travis has done over the last 4 years, the only tight end in NFL history to have four straight 1,000-yard seasons. It's one thing to come into this league and to be a flash in the pan and to have a great season, but you look at the 4 seasons in a row that Travis has had and the consistency at which he's played over the last 4 years, it's pretty incredible. Obviously, it's something that's never been done in the NFL before.
All right, when you say Travis Kelce, no problem. So we'll leave Travis Kelce alone. Take the Vikings out of it. The best team in the NFC, aside from your team, the team that you think has the target on their back, is who?
The best team in the NFC, I would say the Saints. I just go back to consistency. You know, you look year in and year out. They're a team that's there come January. They're a team that's trying to make that next step, just like we are, and get back to the Super Bowl.
Who's the surprising team, Kyle? If that's the consistent, if the Saints are the consistent team, who do you think could be a surprising team?
You know, it's funny. Each and every year, you kind of look at, people always think you look at your schedule and you're looking at the teams like, okay, this, you know what you're going to get from this team and that team. And each and every year, there's a San Francisco 49ers that won 4 games the year before, and then they ended up, you know, playing in a Super Bowl. For me, I always look, somebody's going to turn it around, whether it's a New York Giants, a Washington Redskins, a team that has a fairly high draft pick, and then they end up being a playoff contender. So those are teams that I always look for to turn things around.
This will be my second Gronk question. You talked about how great of a wrestler Gronk is and how much of an asset he is to WWE. If you were to be a wrestler, what would your nickname be, and would you have a favorite finishing move?
That's a great question. I was actually, Adam Thielen did a radiothon last week, and I got asked this same question about potentially joining WWE, and Adam's like, oh, it's great. Your nickname's Big Country. You could do Big Country, and that could be your nickname in the ring. And I joked that guy, Big Country, would get his butt kicked in the ring. That's not serious enough. That doesn't have the persona behind it to be a big-time wrestling name. So, I don't know. I'd have to put some more time into that, because Big Country just doesn't seem like it would cut it in the ring.
All right, Kyle, we know you love your guy Kirk Cousins, but if you put him aside for just a second, let's get back to a question on the field. Other than Cousins, the current quarterback you would most want to play with is blank.
Current quarterback. So, when you asked earlier, I was thinking it was perfect because the 09 Vikings-Packers game was getting replayed last night, and I missed Brett by a year. Brett retired in 2010. I came in 2011. I was like, oh, this is a perfect question for me to talk about Brett Favre. But you said current quarterback. For me, if I had to pick one current quarterback to play with, I would probably say Patrick Mahomes. And I would say Patrick because just the way he plays the game, it almost looks like he's out there on recess, and his improvisation, the way that he extends plays, as a pass catcher, you love that because hey, if I just get open, he's going to get the ball to me.
So it's really interesting because you told us the former quarterback, it sounds like, was going to be Favre. The current quarterback's Mahomes. Again, if we take Cousins out of it, as a receiver, and I know you're a tight end, but as a pass catcher, I should say, is there maybe a little added element of fun for a because Favre and Mahomes have similar styles, kind of draw it up in the dirt and see, go make things happen. Is that what kind of draws you to both of those guys?
Absolutely. I think that's one of the things as I was watching the 09 game against the Packers with Brett, and you kind of look at Brett throughout his career, and you know, I hear stories from so many guys that were around in that 2009 season and just how much fun Brett had playing the game. And you know, to talk about Kirk for a little bit, that's one of the things that I enjoy most about Kirk is his competitiveness, how much he enjoys being out there on Sunday. You know, you want that quarterback to be a guy who has that fire and just wants to go out there and compete and have fun. And that's what Kirk does each and every Sunday.
So what's the balance, Kyle, between having fun and being sort of fierce at the same time? It feels like that's a special type of personality that can combine those two things in the huddle.
Absolutely. But I think it's something that can come hand in hand. I think you can have fun being fierce. I think it's something that when you're that fierce competitor and it's what you truly love doing, you have fun and you enjoy doing it on Sundays.
Kyle, as always, thank you so much for joining us this morning. All the best to you and the three young kids you have at home. We're going to take a break.
Yeah, good luck with the kids, bro.
Right after this.
My God.
Good luck, Kyle.
You're talking Green Bay Packers now. Aaron Rodgers has plans to play in Green Bay past the age of 40. That we know. But the Packers might have their post-Rodger plans already in motion. Green Bay reportedly virtually met with quarterbacks Jalen Hurts and Jordan Love. And their general manager told reporters he would not hesitate to take a quarterback with the Packers' first draft pick. They pick at 30 overall if one of the top prospects fell that far. Greg, I'm going to start with you. You played for the Packers for 7 years. You were there for the transition from Favre to Rodgers. Is it smart for the Packers to be thinking about life post Aaron Rodgers with this upcoming draft?
Of course it is. Of course it's smart with any upcoming draft. If it were last season, if it were this year's draft, yes, it's this is the way of the league. This is the way of your future. And this is how you solidify your future. It's no slap in the face or them saying that Aaron Rodgers is falling off or he's not our guy. This is just giving them an opportunity to get someone in-house, if they so choose to, while Aaron Rodgers is there so that they could learn, whoever that individual is that they choose to select, could see how winning is translated to the football field, to see how preparation gets put in, to see how you work, and to ultimately to sponge off of one of the National Football League's best to ever do it. So yes, you would want to get a guy in so that they could experience all of these things and you could prepare for life after Aaron Rodgers when he decides to hang it up or when he decides to move on. So this is not one of those questions where it's like, should the light? Yes, it's no question. They should. We've seen them without Aaron Rodgers at the helm, and it does not look good when they've had their backups in. So if they can plan and get a guy of their liking and their choice selection to back up Aaron Rodgers now and then step in when the time is right, perfect situation, perfect scenario.
Nick, I don't know what the Packers are thinking about. I think this is the most insane quote we've read from the entire draft. Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback. The future is now. It's a sunny day at the beach, and the Packers GM is inside online shopping for raincoats. Dude, go outside. Enjoy the beach. This is what you've been waiting for. It's a beautiful day. You've got Aaron Rodgers. You've got the 30th pick, the 62nd pick, the 94th pick, and 136. You need offensive tackle. You need a wide receiver. The only quarterback that you should think about drafting is if there's a Julian Edelman-type quarterback who's actually a wide receiver. There's no way you should be considering backing up Aaron Rodgers, who's under contract till 2023. The future is now. Please draft someone to help Aaron Rodgers, not Aaron Rodgers' replacement. So I'm going to get fired up, Nick.
Wilds, I 1,000% agree with you. Here are the numbers
The
Packers should be considering when it comes to this draft. 74. That's the number of points they gave up in two games against the San Francisco 49ers. 13. That's the number of sacks and fumbles Aaron Rodgers suffered in the two games against the 49ers. The Packers were 14-2 last year against the entire NFL, not named San Francisco. They were 0-2 in their two biggest games of the year against San Francisco. The Niners are going to be right back. I understand they traded away DeForest Buckner, but aside from that, basically everybody's back, and you have to anticipate the Niners actually should be healthier next year than they were this year, where they had some bad injury luck. If you're Green Bay, it is all about right now. You were 13-3 and in the NFC Championship game. You would have been hosting that game if you could have beaten the Niners in the regular season. You would have gone to the Super Bowl if you could have beaten the Niners in the postseason. That's what you've got to focus on. You hit lightning in a bottle once when you, at late in the first round, got Aaron Rodgers. You're not going to do that again. So I'm surprised by your answer, Greg, and I want to throw it back to you. Put yourself on that team. Say you are a veteran receiver. Aaron Rodgers is 36 years old. You know how close you were last year. Greg Jennings, if you're on the Packers and they draft someone who the hope is doesn't play a down this year, and you're a veteran player on that team, what is your reaction if that were to happen?
I'm probably looking like, what are we doing? But here's the thing, Nick. It's not just about when they would draft it, or I'm sorry, it's not just will they draft him in the first round or second round. It's just, should they be playing in the future of replacing Aaron Rodgers? Yes, every team does that. Now, whether they decide to do it, that's another thing. Do they have other positions that they need to address before considering that? Of course. I think we all can agree to that. We see that. They are solidified at the quarterback position. They are solidified at the number one wide receiver position. They're solidified at both cornerback positions and one of the safety positions. They need another safety. They need linebackers. They need offensive line. Like, they need many pieces. They need crucial, impactful pieces that can help them get over the hump right now. And a quarterback being selected does not do that for you, but it plans for your future to move on if you decide to move on from Aaron Rodgers 3, 4, or 5 years from now, or whenever he decides to walk off into the sunset. However, if I am on that team, as I will answer your question, no. Why are we drafting a quarterback that's going to back up Aaron Rodgers in the first round? That's just not smart. That's not allowing us to win. But I would understand it if I'm on the executive side planning for the future.
But Nick, let me ask you a question. Aaron Rodgers is 36. He's been, for the most part, battling injuries the last couple of years, some of them season-ending injuries. Realistically, how many more years does he have left him, do you think?
Well, every quarterback in NFL history, other than Brady and Breeze, we would say he's got 2-3 years maximum left. Now, the question is, are Brady and Breeze outliers, or are they the start of a new trend with increased, technology as far as health and fitness, with the change of the rules, or quarterbacks going to start playing a lot longer? But I guess, Wilds, my point would be, I don't care how many years Aaron Rodgers has left to find the Packers, as long as I still have him. It reminds me of the old Bill Polian quote, which was, I think it was Bill Polian, it was someone with the Colts, I'm pretty sure it was Polian, when they were asked about why they don't do more practice with their backup quarterback. So in case Peyton Manning gets hurt, they have some reps. And he says, because if Peyton gets hurt, we're bleeped and we don't practice bleeped. If Rodgers is gone, then you're screwed. So instead of planning for a contingency that will almost assuredly be Wilds, one less with a smaller championship window than one you have right now, maximize Rodgers' window, which means give him some help either on either side of the football, someone that you expect to play 500 snaps this year instead of someone you expect to play zero.
I totally agree. Wide receiver at number 30, Jenna, that's what the Packers should do.
Look, Aaron Rodgers sat behind Brett Favre for a couple of years, and then what happened? Hit the ground running. Maybe Hurts to Rodgers is the next Rodgers to Favre. Who knows? We'll see. All right, let's take a slight turn here. Nick will be spending the next 2 weeks breaking down LeBron James' top 10 playoff games. We went through number 10 and 9 already. My little Quinny will tell you that next up would be number 8. Nick, what do you got?
Number eight is a game most famous for something someone else did, but that game would have never ended the way it did if not for what LeBron did. It's the Ray Allen game. It's 32, 10, and 11, facing elimination against the San Antonio Spurs, a Spurs team that, with Duncan and Popovich, had never lost in an NBA Finals, could have won championship number five right then and there. People forget the context of this game. The Spurs are up 10 going into the fourth quarter. LeBron James scores or assists on 16 consecutive points, turning a 12-point deficit at one point into a tie game in that fourth quarter, leading up to the Ray Allen three. LeBron scored or assisted on 24 of the Heat 29 points. Wade and Bosch, by the way, made zero baskets in that fourth quarter and scored 2 points. LeBron hit the three to cut a 5-point lead to two to set up the Ray Allen three after Kawhi Leonard would then miss one free throw. And LeBron is the one that forced Tony Parker on the potential game-winning shot in regulation after the Ray Allen three into an air ball. This was the game that set up game seven of the NBA Finals, which you will see later on this list. A little spoiler alert. And it was up to that point the most brilliant fourth quarter of LeBron James' career. Championship on the line, goes 16-4-4 to turn a double-digit deficit into a game that goes to overtime where the Heat ultimately prevail. Game six of the 2013 NBA Finals, the Ray Allen game, is LeBron's eighth greatest playoff game of all time.
Here on First Things First now, joined by Chiefs All-Pro safety and Super Bowl champ, Tyrann Mathieu. Ty, good morning. We really appreciate you joining us this morning. You know, last time we spoke to you, you were basking in a fantastic season, in a Super Bowl win. The world is obviously a much different place right now. Now you're home with three kids under age seven, a little daddy daycare. Tell me what your life is like right now in the last couple of weeks.
Well, a lot of homeschooling, so a lot of, you know, doing addition, subtraction, a little multiplication, you know, really just trying to keep my kids energized and keeping their minds fresh, keeping their bodies fresh, and trying not to have their minds on, you know, what our minds are on as adults. So that's been taking up pretty much, you know, most of my day. I try to get my workouts in, and, you know, I try to do something to kind of, you know, step outside of, you know, things I've been doing the last year or so, and you know, I've been trying to read a book here and there, and, you know, so it's a lot of little things I've been trying to do.
Ty, I'm really happy for you, and I was happy for Nick for about a week, maybe a week and a half after the Super Bowl. But at this point, as you guys keep re-signing players, it's just become too much for Jenna and I. It's just too much to handle, and we're trying to be like, Super Bowl curse, Super Bowl hangover. It's just a lot for us. So what are you guys doing to get back to the Super Bowl? And is there any chance at all the Super Bowl curse could come into play to give Jenna and I a break from Nick's incessant fandom?
No, well, to be honest, I think you guys have to deal with that, you know, for a while. You know, we got a lot of good guys on our team. We got a good locker room. A lot of our guys, you know, really like playing with each other, for each other. And then I think anytime you could have some coaches that guys really like to play for, I think you can see that once you cut on the tape. So, and then anytime you got guys like Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, just guys that you know are going to show up to work and continue to get guys that's younger than them better, guys that's older than them better. I think as long as we have guys like that around, I think we'll keep going in the direction, you know, we're headed in.
Ty, Wilds alluded to it. 20 of 22 starters returning, nearly unprecedented for a Super Bowl champ. So I'm going to ask you to figuratively, not literally, take that dope hat that you currently have on off and put on a GM hat. You're sitting there at the number 32 pick of the draft. I don't need a name unless you want to give me one, but if you were counseling Brett Veach remotely, what is the spot on the team you would say, if available, that's what we should do on draft day?
Well, no, I think, you know, anytime you can get somebody on the defensive side of the ball, you know, with a certain attitude that has a certain edge. I always think guys like that can, you know, instantly take your defense to the next level. I think, you know, very few guys on offense can really come into the league, you know, early on and make big impact plays. But, you know, like I said, we got great guys around us. So I don't feel like it's, you know, I don't feel like we're in a dire need at one particular, you know, position. Like you mentioned, we got 20 guys coming back, you know, from the Super Bowl team.
Ty, I want to ask you about your head coach. I spent 4 years covering Andy Reid when he was with the Eagles. He's actually a really funny guy. He's a captivating guy. He's a different guy than the guy you see sometimes at the press conferences. Exactly. You're on the sideline where you never see his teeth the whole game. Give me a story that really colors some insight into who Andy Reid is that people outside, you know, of a Sunday afternoon don't often get.
Yeah, I mean, he's all about his players. You know, he's all about us. He's all about our families. He wants us in the best mindset possible. You know, he wants us to have this personality, man. He wants us to be ourselves. And I think that allows players to really relax and then play their best game. And I think Coach Reid, you know, really has a history of, you know, really, you know, getting good football teams together, putting together good football teams. And I'm just so happy for him right now that, you know, a lot of those things that he's always been doing, you know, is really starting to come together, you know, for him on a personal level as a coach.
Ty, I'm a Patriots fan. And I was trying to get myself to believe in Jarrett Stidham and that we're going to have a successful season. I was trying to come up with an angle here. And I was watching some of your plays and how you interact with some of your old plays on Twitter when they'll describe everything that you're doing. And I said, ooh, I have an idea. I'll ask Ty about this. Is having a lack of film from a Joe Burrow or when Tua comes out or a guy like Jarrett Stidham, is how do you prepare for a quarterback when there isn't a ton of tape on them?
Well, I don't think you really can prepare for them. You know, I've had a couple instances where, you know, we've tried to go back and watch high school tape and, you know, tape from college, and it just doesn't really add up. You know, I think some of these guys progress a lot faster than, you know, what we may have seen the last time, you know, we've seen them. So, and then it's a lot of good coaches in the league as well. So a lot of guys can really, you know, make that transition from year to year. So, you know, you really rely on coaching. And then some of these guys are just, you know, really motivated to put themselves in a position to be a starter.
Well, before I ask my question, I'll answer Wild's question. For defenses to prepare for Stidham, they're going to spend a little extra practice time on those end zone celebrations, those group pictures that you do after a turnover or a defensive score.
You know what?
That's how
guys will be preparing for Stidham this year.
But more importantly, talking to defending Super Bowl champion Ty Matthew, Ty, you're great at giving credit to other people and talking about the guys around you and the success and Andy and Patrick. But something really cool happened for you this offseason. You made the all-decade team. And it was for a guy who has, you've been playing for a while, but you missed a season. You've played for a few different teams. I'm sure there were some questions for people whether or not you'd reach your full potential. You obviously now have. If you can talk about yourself for a moment, how gratifying was that? That's the biggest honor the NFL gives out, other than the Hall of Fame, that you were one of the safeties for the All-Decade team, Ty.
Yeah, I think I'm extremely fortunate, and then I'm so grateful. You know, if anybody has been following my story, you know, I missed a year due to injuries this decade. You know, earlier this year, before I even played in the NFL, I was suspended a year from LSU. So I've had my fair share of adversity, and, you know, not many guys are able to kind of, you know, see the other side of it. And so I'm in a great position. I don't really think it says a lot about me. It's just more about, you know, the people I have around me, the people that continue to inspire me. You know, guys like Coach Reid, Coach Spags, Coach Merritt, guys that, you know, truly believe in who I am as a person, you know, beyond the football field. And I just think having people like that in my life, really this past decade, you know, I think that has really helped me continue to live with a perspective and then just, you know, do the things I love to do, you know, and be 100%, you know, in those things. And I think that's all I've been trying to do.
So then, Ty, let me ask you this. On Monday, you tweeted, I think I finally know what I want to do after football. Number one, when is that? Number two, what is that?
Right. Well, so I always tell my coaches I'm going to play at least 15 years. So it'll be at least another 8 years. But I think I really want to help the average person. Maybe it's politics. Maybe it's some lines of, you know, being an educator or a coach. I think the most important thing for me is to remember where I came from, the chair I used to sit in, And how can I reach those people? You know, how can I make those people's lives better? How can I get certain people to believe in themselves? And so I think that's what I want to do after football. I want to continue to inspire people. I want to continue to be hands on and really help people.
Ty, my New Year's resolution was to eat more vegetables and to start meditating. And I saw that you were meditating. I was trying to convince Nick to pick it up. Can you try to convince Nick of how valuable it is and how it's helped you?
It's helped me out a lot. And I'm really not exaggerating. There's many different kinds of meditation. Sometimes I do guided meditation where, you know, I'll have my yoga coach, Donnie, he'll come in, you know, he'll get on the phone with me and he'll kind of guide me through a meditation, right? Tell me what to think of. And then there's this unguided meditation where you can literally lock yourself in a room, you know, turn the lights off and talk to yourself, you know, try to guide yourself through your day. Try to see your week. Try to see, you know, the game that you're going to play in this weekend. Try to visualize the good things. I think we spend too much time thinking about bad things and not enough good things. So I think that's why meditation is. I think that's why it's important.
Well, Ty, thank
you
so much, man.
Go ahead, Nick. I know you want to get one last word.
Congratulations. The story's unbelievable. We could talk to you forever. I am going to say, though, 90% of the time, Ty's meditating. 10% of the time, the kids are at home. The baby's crying. He's like, honey, I'm meditating. And he's just pulling. Like, I just need some time, folks. Thank you so much, Ty. We appreciate
you. Thank you. Yes, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Ty.
Ty, all the best to you. Stay safe and healthy. Good luck when the season picks up again. We really appreciate your time. We got to go.